1039 1450 WKXL, and now 1019 in Manchester, plus NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale. We are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive at 124 Store Street in Concord, serving the Concord area since 1995. You can call them for an appointment right now, 603-225-7988. WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. Dan Feltus, how are you today?
I'm good, Ken. How are you doing?
I am feeling great.
You look great.
Yeah, full of energy.
Listeners can't see it, but Ken is fired up.
I am fired up because we have a great guest. We always have great guests on the show, but this one is terrific. And a friend of mine for a long time and the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at New Hampshire College, Neil Levesque. Neil, how are you today?
I am fantastic. Looking out at some snow on the mountain here where I live. For the first time this year, we have a little coating of snow, so it's coming. It's unavoidable.
Winter's coming, Neil.
It's beginning to look a lot like Thanksgiving. Yes, indeed. Yes, frost on my windshield today. Maybe not for the first time, but the most significant frost that we've had so far this season. But Neil, any tales before we get into politics? Any tales from the high seas these days?
No, the tuna season's still open, but you know, it gets to a point where you say, I think it's time to get off the water. It's so dangerous out there this time of the year because the cold and the heat, and it just is. Creates some big waves, and we had a big storm last week, as you know, and a couple of big, very expensive tuna boats broke off their moorings at Rye Harbor and in other places, and so it's time to start thinking about Thanksgiving.
That it is, no question.
And if you don't have turkey, just do tuna from your tuna fishing.
Right.
Tuna for Thanksgiving, not a bad idea. And with the price of turkeys being what they are these days, they've gone up quite a bit in recent months, no question about it. So, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea. Have a little tuna casserole and the green bean casserole, and you're all set. But, Neil, first of all, let's talk a little bit about the latest poll from the St. Anselm College Survey Center. It came out last month. What were your takeaways from that recent survey?
Well, I think the main major takeaway is that 68% of New Hampshire voters believe that the country is on the wrong track. And that is a major indicator of the fact that voters will usually reject the party in power when they feel that way. And there are many different reasons why. They weren't all spelled out in the poll. There are many theories as to why 68% believe that the country's on the wrong track. And, of course, they're not all the same reasons for all the 68% who feel that way. But that being said, I think some of that is why we saw what we've seen in Virginia and New Jersey on Election Day this year. And I think that some of this is coming out of the Biden administration and his numbers, which are not good. And so what you're seeing now is that the country feels uneasy and is on the wrong track, or people believe that, and figuring out why that is, and if the political parties and campaigns can figure out why that is and sort of capitalize on that, speak to those issues, they're going to be successful.
Some of the numbers in your poll seem to reflect, as you said, what's happening nationally in the Democrats taking a big hit right now. We look at the gubernatorial race in Virginia, where the political newcomer Glenn Youngkin defeated longtime political operative and former Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, and nearly another major upset in New Jersey. So what message is this sending to Democrats?
Okay, well, there's two theories on this. One theory, mainly from the left, is that they haven't passed enough of the Biden agenda, and they've been screwed up with the fighting amongst their own party, that they haven't passed these things that are going to make people's lives better, and therefore voters are letting them know that they're unhappy about that. The second theory is that there are things in the country that are making Americans uneasy, and some of this has to do with parents and teachers and education, and so parenting, if you will, and things like critical race theory, things that are bleeding to the surface that in the social aspect of politics that are making people uneasy. And you add in what you already mentioned, which was inflation and the general unease about other issues such as Afghanistan and things like that. You mix all that together, and that's the second theory. So, you know, you've got the Manchin side of the Democratic Party, and you have the sort of more progressive side of the party, and I think that they have continued. This election result doesn't necessarily settle anything as far as how they move forward on the budget and any of the infrastructure bills that they have out there, including the very large one.
Yeah, Neil, for what it's worth, I think it's probably, excuse me, a mix of both theories. You know, and I think the interesting thing is candidates on the Republican side are trying to drive that Trump base out based on fabricated issues like, for example, critical race theory, which, by the way, has been a theory that's been around since the 1970s and by and large not taught anywhere but law schools, and trying to demagogue those issues to get the Trump base to the polls. And to some degree, it looks like it was effective, unfortunately, even though it's a fabricated issue. Neil, how much do you see those kind of, obviously, the legislature in New Hampshire, Republican-controlled, passed in the budget a ban on discussing, quote-unquote, divisive concepts. Critical race theory, that term doesn't appear in the legislation, but that's kind of what it goes to. How do you see that playing out here in New Hampshire, this issue of discussion of race and people being uncomfortable with the concept of race being discussed?
Well, I think that there's an overall sense in some sectors that wokeness has gone sort of too far. And critical race theory or tests or teaching people that their bias is offensive to them. And I think that it's more than a Trump base. I think that it's a lot of suburban voters who say, what did you learn in school today? Well, I learned this. And I think that there's a backlash to that. I think that notable Democrats, today James Carville tweeted the Democrats need to get wokeness out of their politics. And I think that there's a backlash to some of this stuff. They're more than just social issues, and they don't necessarily show up in polls because a lot of times pollsters don't want to, an interviewer doesn't want to say, yeah, I'm mad about critical race theory because they're afraid to be called a racist. So I think that these things are bubbling up. I think that we've seen things like defund the police, where that was a sort of thing that suburban, middle-class voters said, hey, wait a second. We like when we call the police and that the police come, and we're not for this stuff. I think overall, some of this is that a party wins and they get into power. In this case, the House, Senate, and White House are Democrats, and the sort of left side of that power starts to vocalize what they want to do. And it may not be what mainstream voters voted for or thought they voted for, which I think to some degree people pushed. They voted because they wanted to push Donald Trump and all of the chaos and everything else out of the picture, but they didn't necessarily vote to forgive student debt or do some of these things that you hear about in Washington. So it happens all the time, both sides of the aisle, where a party comes into power and they sort of overreach a little bit, at least on the messaging, and the voters react, and a lot of the times react negatively to that.
Well, Neil, I think that it's interesting because in part what you said, the implication of it, it reflects perception which does not match reality. There's no major Democratic candidate advocating for defunding the police. There is not. President Biden is not. None of that is going on. And literally for in critical race theory is not even being taught in grade schools and in high schools. So, I mean, these issues seem to be sort of fabricated. But what is happening is people are crunched. Their pocketbooks are crunched. The kitchen table issues. That working families are struggling to get by. And what I see is the Democrats, unfortunately, ditching something like paid family and medical leave out of their agenda. And hopefully it comes back into it. But that's something with concrete, tangible results for people, especially in a pandemic, so that they can be there for a family member who's sick. They can be there when a child smiles or rolls over for the first time, or be there for a senior parent who is in hospice. You can't get that time back. And to throw paid family and medical leave insurance off to the sideline, I think is a major mistake.
Well, I think that the pocketbook issues at this point might be related to inflation. So I was in the west side of Manchester the other day at a very popular restaurant, and there's a sticker across the menu that says, due to the price increases at this time, the prices on everything are up 5%, what they're listed in the menu. And, you know, they put the sticker on there because they're probably anticipating that they're going to have to put the number 10%, you know, in another month. And people are seeing it at the gas pump, at everything you buy. Let's face it. Ken mentioned the turkeys. But a lot of that is because there was a lot of money spent during COVID, and there was a lot of money spent in February, and people like Manchin were saying, hey, this is going to cause inflation. It's going to backlash. And now what we hear is even more money is going to be spent. And so perhaps the people that are actually hurt by this are the people who are making a median family income, and they're going out and their grocery bill is 20% more than it was before, and that's upsetting them.
Well, I mean, so, I think one of the, it's a key issue, you know, no doubt about it. But just saying inflation exists, which exists always to some extent and to some degree, and digging into why it exists are two different things. And I think it's just easy for, it seems to me, easy for people to say, oh, you know, there's inflation, so therefore blame President Biden. When in reality, economists, including conservative economists, are not certain that the spending bills are directly driving. In fact, the supply chain disruptions and the fact that the economy is trying to get back on track with supply chain disruptions would result in inflation regardless of the spending. So how do you dig into that, and does it even matter in terms of the perception
well, I
out
think
there?
That, I think that people see that when you're passing $1 trillion bills and that kind of money is coming into the economy, it's going to have an effect. And I think that it's been crafty for the White House to go and talk about supply chains and talk about the ships that are lining up in L.A., a real problem. The pictures are real. And extending the work week from 6 days to 7 days for people who are taking the cargo off. But I think that that might be a little bit of a distraction from the fact that there is this enormous, enormous amount of money that has come into the economy and more that may come in. And that pushes up prices. And so right now, you know, you can't even go buy a car if you wanted to. And if you find one, it's $10,000 more than the sticker price. And that's another upsetting factor for people. How possibly can someone who makes the median amount of money in New Hampshire at this point afford, you know, a house, you know, if you, God forbid, you live near the seacoast, where the median, you know, house, I think, is something like $700,000 or some, the sale price, it's just, it's real, and people know it, and they can size this up. I don't know how you can say that the amount of money that has come into the economy hasn't created some sort of an inflationary thing. You said there's always inflation. I agree with that. Obviously, there's always inflation, it seems. But the numbers that we're seeing are huge.
Well,
and,
I mean,
you know, you don't have to be an economist. Just go to the gas pump.
Well, I absolutely right, Neil. I mean, there's demand and supply features, macroeconomic, that drive it. And obviously, increasing demand by more money in the economy helps upward pressure, no doubt. I'm not disputing that. I think there's a dispute over what component is driving it predominantly. And on top of that, there is more money in the economy, too, in result of the Trump tax cuts for those at the very top. And there's more money there, and that money was driving a lot of what was going on as well. So to say that child care tax credits or some of these other programs that help working class people is responsible for inflation, and not say that tax breaks for those at the very top and the resulting spending by big corporations and others has no effect, I just think is, I'm not saying you're saying this, Neil, but I think it's disingenuous of some on the far right who are saying that.
Well, I guess it's not just on the far right. It's in the Democratic Party. They have their members. The reason why these things are not included, as you mentioned, is that the Democrats have taken them out. When the Republicans don't control the Senate, they don't control the House, and they don't control the White House, it's not just the far right. They have to look in the mirror and say, why are these things not in there? I understand what you're saying, and I think that you're right in the fact that there's a lot of different factors, but I think the overwhelming one for most Americans to look at is to say, this is an enormous amount of money that came into the economy, and it's having a reaction. And in hindsight, it might be that we staved off a depression because we borrowed this money and put it in the economy, and now we're having, you know, inflation, which is very annoying and upsetting, but it's not as bad as, you know,
as a depression. Yeah.
A depression. So, you know, you're right about being fair. You know, there, you made a point earlier about the fact that some things appear in politics that create a lot of angst and anxiety, and they're not necessarily real. We're hearing right now that the Biden administration is considering giving $450,000 to immigrants who are separated from their families. That is one of these things, just like you mentioned, where there's not a lot of factual basis to it. And I'll tell you what that's all about. There are people who have sued the federal government because they separated them from their children. So they have a right to sue. And the court is hearing this, and the lawyers in the Justice Department, these are lawyers just like we would hire, are saying, we're going to lose this suit, and we may have to pay these folks $1 million, so let's settle for $450,000.
Right.
So it's much, much different than the story that you're hearing out there, that somebody is crossing the border of Mexico and being handed a check for $450,000. That
exactly.
is not the case.
Not true. Yep. Yep.
So I guess, you know, but it's on both sides. I mean, there's a lot of things on both sides that you say to yourself, well, this is not factual, but it's it becomes a hot button issue. And people who don't have time to sit there and read 10 newspapers a day can capitalize on it and can say, okay, I can boil this down that Biden is not really enforcing the borders. He's letting all these people come through. That's not fair to me because they're taking something from me. And then, oh, by the way, my tax dollars are going to be given away to them to the extent of $450,000. That's the kind of thing that really can send a voter to the polls.
Neil Levesque is with us. He is the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. We have to take a quick break here on Feldes and Kale at 103.9 in Concord, 101.9 on the FM dial in Manchester, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Welcome back. It's Feldes and Kale here at 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, and the old reliable signal, 1450 WKXL, and also nhtalkradio.com, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Call them right now, 603-225-7988. Neil Levesque is with us for a short time more, and Neil is the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. Wednesday, Joe Biden came out to address the media to talk about the new vaccine, the COVID vaccine for children ages 5 through 11. But during the questioning period that he had, which he hasn't taken questions from the media before Wednesday, you know, for a couple of months from the White House press corps, but he definitely seems to feel, Neil, that the way things went in Virginia and New Jersey took place because Congress has yet to pass the Build Back Better bill, which most people don't even know what's in it. But, you know, like we were discussing in our previous segment, I think it's more like what's happened since January 20th. The southern border is wide open. Inflation is soaring. Gas prices up by a buck and a half over this time last year. Afghanistan did not end well. You know, we can't unload the cargo ships, so Christmas is in jeopardy. And, you know, many school districts are teaching our children curriculum that parents do not approve of. Let's put it that way, because it's true. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that Congress hasn't passed the Build Back Better bill. Do you?
Well, I think that that's what the president's going to say, because that's the only thing he can really say. He's not going to say it's because he did any overreach or the Democrats had bad messaging or something like that. He's got to say this is where we've got to move forward. You know, I agree with you. I think that most Americans probably don't know what's in that bill, and that's not really what they're focused on. You know, to go back to something that was said earlier about, you know, the Trump voter, you know, the Virginia race was interesting because Youngkin's got the endorsement of Trump, but Trump didn't come in and do all kinds of things, and Youngkin's didn't go around saying, you know, the 2020 election was stolen and it was robbed. And if anything, actually, McAuliffe did that. He brought in Stacey Abrams and said that she actually won the Georgia election, and that the election system was rigged against her and everything else. It was like a complete reversal and pretty outrageous. But that being said, it was as if the Republican candidate was like a quiet, stable candidate and an alternative that people could vote for that wasn't scary and didn't have all of the sort of things that Trump brought with him. And Trump fires up the base, but it's hard to get to 51 with Trump. And Youngkin's was able to do it, dancing that sort of fine line. And I think if Sununu runs for the Senate, I think that he's been good about trying to figure out this sort of fine line between the Trump voter and the Trump himself and his own agenda. And he's been able to be on that knife edge quite successfully. So I think that that'd be something to watch if he does, in fact, make this move and run for the Senate.
I think there is some truth, though, to what the president says in terms of if you break out. I mean, it is true. I think even just talking to people we know, Neil and Ken, you know, you talk to them, Build Back Better, and a lot of folks don't know what that means other than it's a good tagline, right? But once you look at the things in it, people are overwhelmingly supportive of those issues. And while it may not be necessarily 100% true in the current sense in terms of public perception, but if those things are delivered and it's communicated and connected, which I think there needs to be a better connection with the child care tax credit, for example, that President Biden, you know, and the Democrats did that. If those connections are made, universal pre-K, help for working families, for seniors, for caregivers, hopefully paid family and medical leave insurance so people can actually not have to choose between work and family, child care. If those things are communicated and delivered, that's a substantially different election in 2022 than if those things are not delivered and not communicated.
Well, that would be the argument. And, you know, it's interesting is that they talk about it being an infrastructure bill, obviously Build Back Better. You know, sounds like you're building railway stations and things like that. But what you just mentioned are social things. And I think some people will be like, wait a second. I thought this was about roads and bridges and things like that. And so it is also very hard to communicate what's in a bill when what's in the bill keeps changing week to week. And this has been a problem for the
That's
president.
True. Yep.
You know, how do you go on the road and sell something which you really don't even know what the final result is because nobody can agree on it? So the whole thing's really been flubbed up for some time, and that gives people a bad taste in their mouth.
I can't disagree with that. I would say that. I mean, you got, for listeners, you got the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which is roads, bridges, ports, broadband. Senator Hass and Senator Shaheen played a key role in that. There's that bill, and then there's the Build Back Better, which is a second bill, which deals with human infrastructure. And I think when you look at the business community, especially in New Hampshire, one of the major issues they talk about is a lack of access to high-quality, affordable child care, which is one of the key reasons why we're failing to up labor market participation and attract and retain young working people and young working families. So that child care piece in particular is an economic driver that helps across the board. And I haven't seen it necessarily communicated that way. And I think if it is, in my view anyways, that would be very effective for President Biden and the Democrats.
Well,
I think...
Neil, you agree. Ken agrees. <Yeah.
laughs> Well, they better start communicating better then. I guess that's the bottom line, right? They better start communicating what this bill has so that people do know about some of the social aspects of it. Because most people don't. Because most people don't follow it as closely as you do, Dan, or you do, Neil. And, they just hear, oh, we're going to give free college to illegal immigrants. I mean, that's really what people know about the social aspect of this bill. And I think they've taken that out of it, but I don't think they've communicated that very well either. They're not very good at communicating. You know, the funny, you talk about Youngkin walking a fine line because Trump endorsed him. He held a telemedia or a teleconference, in favor of Youngkin on Monday before the election, which Youngkin was not a part of. He was doing rallies elsewhere, but he was backed by Trump, but he kept his distance as well, which was, as you pointed out, Neil, very interesting and a fine line to walk.
And I think it's hard to, you know, some of the history that you're sort of reading about now about the Trump era is that it's very hard to sort of contain him sometimes and say, you know, you can't go into Virginia and have all the, you know, five big rallies because it's actually going to hurt the candidate. And he was able to sort of hold off. I don't know how they managed to do that. So I think that the winning recipe here is Trump fires up his Republican base. But in addition to that, you have to have candidates that are talking about things that are appealing to, middle-class voters who may be sort of subject to normally voting on the D side or are willing to switch and vote for the Republican side.
So I think that that's part of the recipe. I think that they're going to look at this Virginia election and really carve it up. Interesting, though, you know, on a national, we're talking about, you know, elections across the country, but here in New Hampshire, several Democrats won in mayoral races, and in the last three special elections in New Hampshire, the Democrats have taken those seats as well for state rep. Those are significant as well, I think, particularly the Bedford outcome, a town that is normally has 15% more Republican registrations than Democrats. So, you know, a Republican really should win in a special election, and they didn't. And the Democrat won, and they closed the election really pushing on Roe versus Wade and the threat to abortion, and they and the Democrats won with that. So that's another sort of interesting caveat here. As I look to 2022 election, I see that there are several court cases out there that the Supreme Court could take up. And if they were to rule in late June and restrict in any way Roe versus Wade, that could be an issue that really injects the Democrats and the left, because the Second Amendment and the abortion issue are two issues that, if there is a threat to them, tend to really fire up certain segments of the base, and that can change election outcomes.
Sure. And Neil, one of the things that in that Bedford race, Representative, now Representative Catherine Rombo, a wonderful person, she focused on abortion rights, but she also focused on the voucher bill and sending public tax dollars to private and religious schools, and the resulting pressure on property taxes. And that element, I think, will be something that will be front and center moving forward, too, especially depending on who the candidates are. Neil, what's your sense of getting back to the bipartisan infrastructure bill and then the Build Back Better bill with child care and paid family leave and those sorts of things? What's your sense about what's going to happen on those two pieces of legislation? Because obviously, in addition to the Supreme Court cases, whether and how those bills pass will shape 2022 as well.
I think it all depends on Manchin. And I think that the more that they upset him, as they did yesterday with, you know, Sanders coming out of a meeting and going right to the press and Manchin sort of being upset about it, I think that that is not good. And Manchin could actually end up with something that is much more scaled down and agree to that. And then the left won't agree to that. So it could be one of these things that just ends up in the toilet and nothing happens. Biden has kind of promised that he knows how to deal with Congress and he knows how to get things done. And we're just not seeing that with this set of bills. And it's his party. So he's, you know, you got to sort of lay the blame where it is.
You know, I want you to, you two, because you know a lot more about these things than I do. I think if Donald Trump had won the election in November, that I think Terry McAuliffe would be the governor-elect of Virginia right now, and Phil Murphy wouldn't have had as difficult a time winning New Jersey as he had with his opponent, relatively unknown opponent. If Donald Trump was still president, I think those two governors would have cruised to victory.
Well, if you look back at history, you'll see that the party in power, a lot of the times they're making decisions and people react to that, and a lot of times it can't be something to everyone, and there's a bad reaction. So I guess if I had to put my retirement account on a bet, I would bet the same thing on that theory. That being said, Trump's not in office, and he's really not as vocal as he used to be without Twitter. And so the focus now is on, okay, what's going on in Washington? Who's in charge? And what are they doing? And, you know, Afghanistan and the pullout, you know, I don't necessarily think that in 2022 that's going to be a front and center issue that you know, people drive to the polls for. But what I think it did was it started this erosion where people said, wait a second, this administration is not as capable as we thought. And that was where that was. So I think the other thing about McAuliffe, by the way, and this is kind of an interesting thought when we talk about New Hampshire politics, you know, there's a lot of people who believe that Biden will not seek a second term. And a lot of that has to do with his age, and not to age discriminate. But if he were to not seek another term, Harris is not necessarily the person that all Democrats would rally around behind. And so the theory is who is on the bench for the Democrats?
And Neil, can I interrupt right here? Because this is like a cliffhanger, okay? This is a cliffhanger. So I want to take a quick break because we have to pay the bills here because Dan makes an awful lot of money here at WKXL. take a quick break. Neil Levesque is with us from the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College on 1450 AM WKXL, the signal that's been around for 75 years, folks. It's even longer than me. 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 in Manchester, brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Welcome back. It's Feldis and Kale at 103.9 FM, 101 FM in Manchester, 101.9 FM, 1450 WKXL, the old reliable signal. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Neil Levesque with us, and we only have a few more minutes left, but Neil is always interesting and intriguing, and he left us with a cliffhanger just moments ago. Who is on the Democratic bench? If Joe Biden decides not to run for re-election in 2024 and Kamala Harris continues to hide wherever she is, who is on the bench, Neil?
Well, that's the whole thing, is that McAuliffe was sort of somebody that people would say he'd be the governor of Virginia. He knows how to raise money. He knows his way around the party. He would be someone that we would be looking towards. And so that was interesting, too, as a result of Tuesday. I just think that we, in this 2024 election for president, we could have just a crazy outcome, because if that plays out on the Democratic side and there's no incumbent, and then on the Republican side, President Trump continues to say, and maybe never actually says, that he's not running for president, or he does run for president, who challenges him and who is the heir apparent if he doesn't? Who waits for that big endorsement? And so there's a lot of different things at work when we think about 2024 and the great uncertainty looking out at who might be the next president of the United States.
Well, maybe that's the underlying factor why Dan Feltes is moving to Iowa. To get in that, entrenched in that caucus state, you know, maybe that's the underlying reason that he's moving to the great state of Iowa.
Well, I appreciate the flattery there, and Neil, in 2022, before 2024 is 2022, and we got a revised draft map released by Republicans in the New Hampshire House, which drastically gerrymanders CD1 and CD2, adding Portsmouth, Dover, Durham into Annie Custer's district, and then giving Salem, Atkinson, Hudson, and some other heavily Republican communities, traditionally heavily Republican communities, into Pappas's district, which drastically changes the makeup. And is a clear targeting of Chris Pappas. I don't think any. And you see the map; it doesn't even look. It's like all these gerrymandered maps. It looks super funky. What's your take on it? What's your response to some of the responses out there?
Well, this is kind of goes back to what I said about the party in power sometimes overreaches, and if this doesn't pass the smell test for voters, they're going to think that somebody's rigging something for one party versus the other.
Yep.
On a practical side of things, there's a couple of things at work here. Number one, Sununu has said that he won't sign something that he sees as being overly gerrymandered, essentially. That's not an exact quote. And the second factor is that, you know, he's endorsed a candidate in the second congressional district who would be greatly disadvantaged by this map. And thirdly, I think that if Republicans believe that candidates cannot be, will automatically win if we create special gerrymandered districts, are wrong. And we saw that in Bedford, as I mentioned, plus 15 Republican town, a Democrat wins. So there's nothing set in stone. And some of these candidates win because they have a great local connection to the people in their communities. Chris Pappas is a great example of that. You know, the guy who makes the best chicken tenders on the planet.
From the home of chicken tenders.
He continues to win elections at the back room, at the Puritan back room. Everybody, you know, knows the Puritan back room, and they know who he is. And so there's a practical side of this and a sort of a smell test. But I will tell you, as someone who worked, I was a staffer in the second congressional district, going from Pittsburgh to Portsmouth and then all over to Walpole, that is a very expensive gas expense for these staffers. And I wish we had Portsmouth back then. You know, it would have been a great place to live. But it's just, there's so much driving to go to your constituents in such a plan. But, you know, who has the votes?
Well, Neil Levesque, always great to have you with us. And always intriguing and interesting. And we appreciate your time. We know you're a busy guy. So thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. And I will have you back soon.
Thanks so much, Neil.
Well, thank you. And good luck to you in Iowa.
Appreciate it.
And it should be exciting out there as we get to, you know, 20. Just amazing, the two states that you have lived in. Two of the most political states in the nation.
Yep. No, it's very exciting and great opportunity for Aaron and the family. Appreciate it, Neil. And we'll stay in touch.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Neil. Take care. Bye-bye. Neil Levesque, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. We will take our final break. It is Feldis and Kale right here on 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM Manchester, 1450 AM WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers at Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. And they're going to be losing a great customer soon in Dan Feldis. But you can check them out. They do a tremendous job, and they've been doing it since 1995. WeedFamilyAutomotive.com. Welcome back. Heading down the home stretch of Feldis and Kale here at 1450 AM, 1039 FM, 1019 FM in Manchester, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Here's the most interesting story, I think, that took place on Tuesday of this week, Dan, and it's Republican Edward Durr, D-U-R-R, a South Jersey commercial trucker. He appears to have pulled off a major political upset in New Jersey. Democrat Stephen Sweeney, New Jersey's longest-running state Senate president, seems to be on the verge of losing his seat to Mr. Durr, who had never run for any office before. He spent $153 during his campaign, he says, on Dunkin' Donuts and paper flyers over the course of his campaign. He's upsetting this guy, Sweeney, who's been the Senate president for longer than anybody in New Jersey history.
You just never know, Ken. Never know. And it's an incredibly disruptive and political situation and fluid political situation out there. And it goes back to what I've said and you've said is, you know, for listeners out there, get active, get engaged in your democracy. It's your democracy. And in the words of former Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, the most important political office in a democracy is that of private citizen. Not state senator, Senate president, governor, U.S. senator, what have you. private citizen. So, you know, the people who show up on Election Day choose, it's not the voting base, it's the voters that show up. And so it's up to you to get active and engaged, speak out on the issues, and to vote. And it's just another example of you never know what's going to happen.
And that'll do it for this edition of Feltus and Kale right here at WKXL.